Tucker is.
Okay, great.
When we went to do the liftoff, the way it was done was one of the guys that worked for me, a fellow by the name of Harley Weyer, W-E-Y-E-R, did all the pre-mission work so that we knew which commands were going to be sent in the sequence.
Okay.
The picture you see on 17 was the only one that really worked because the 15 had the motor problems, and on 16, John Young parked the rover in the wrong place, so the commands that we sent were not working right.
I understand. Mm-hmm.
So on 17, what you saw was the first command was sent as Cernan counted down to zero. It was, he had not said, you know, he was counting down 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. I think if I remember right in the sequence, it, when he said 3, I sent the tilt up command.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And all the commands that were sent that give you that liftoff picture that you see were sent without my looking at the picture at all. I never saw that till later.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And all I did was follow the script that Harley had put together as to what commands there were and when to send them.
Okay.
So, you know, it was like tilt up, zoom out, whatever. Those commands were all done that way.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how you did it. So it was very important, as you can figure out in your mind, that the rover be parked the right distance from that lunar rope module.
Yeah, because the... It was, it's all trigonometry, I guess.
Right. I mean, it's just plain old math.
Mm-hmm.
If you're looking there, and if it's in the wrong place, you're going to fly right out of it.
That's right. It would pan at either a slower
right.
or faster rate than what
right.
you wanted.
Right. Everything was, you know, there were no pan commands. There were tilt and zoom and
mm-hmm.
so on. But that sequence was all sent without looking at the picture, just sending the commands via a clock.
Right.
And that's how that picture came about. And the reason it didn't happen on 16 is the rover was parked in the wrong place. So Cernan and I had very big discussions about all that.
Oh, okay.
Pre-mission.
Mm-hmm. All right.
And Gene and I are good friends, and he knew that he was dead if he parked it in the wrong place.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, that, what was the, gosh, that was, it, 17 was it, but I understand that the networks, for 17, they just weren't interested in 17.
Well, that's another whole story. On 15, we knocked every soap opera off the air.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the U.S., all three networks, whatever else there was at that time, PBS, I believe, they carried every single bit of the TV.
Wow, okay.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
On 16, it started to fall off, and on 17, we couldn't even get on the air.
Yeah.
What else was interesting, as I later found out, is that it was on every single bit of it, all three missions in Europe.
Oh, okay.
I won an award over there for the TV camera stuff, and I found out that it was big time over there, in Germany especially.
Mm-hmm. Isn't that ironic?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. It was the TV and the lunar stuff was bigger in Europe after 11 than it was in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you really really hit all the points I was hoping you would.
Okay.
And I'm glad I got you at home.
Let me tell you something else, so maybe this will also help you.
Okay.
For each mission, we put out a book, and I'm trying to get, I think I have one copy of one of them here. I'm not a big junk collector, but I do have one copy, I believe. And I was going to give you the exact name of this book that was part of the whole package of doing this.
Okay.
And, oh, that's an Apollo television book. Okay. Okay. Document's called the Lunar Surface Television Ops Plan.
Oh, okay.
And I have the one for 16 in my, no, for 15 in my hand. You know, it's loaded up and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And we put that book out of my section, and what it basically shows in there, it shows what's going to happen, the timeline, explains in there how the system works, and so on.
Okay.
Tile operation. This mm-hmm. is a small document. And it's give or take, say, 75 pages.
Okay.
And it was put out and signed off all the way up through the system, all the way up through the director of flight operations.
Okay.
And that way everybody knew and could train and could get an idea of what we were going to do and how it was going to work.
Okay.
Okay.
Now, all these images that were being down were, I guess, videotaped in real time as they were, and they were being obviously recorded, right?
Right.
Was that there in Houston or some other?
Well, I think if I remember right, and also because there's a guy out at, who used to be at JPL, who has done a big study on television. I don't know whether you've talked to him, a fellow by the name of Wood.
No.
Okay.
No.
His name is Bill Wood. He's a former engineer out at the JPL site.
Okay.
And it's also on a web. Can I give you his number if you want?
Okay.
And it's got some pictures, the cameras there, and so on. There's some data in there that's not 100% correct, but that's the way everything is. But there's some real nice data and some colored pictures, the ground stations, the cameras, and so on.
Mm. Okay.
They did the same thing. Now, what happened at the sites was, if I remember correctly, at each site that was receiving the video, they recorded it and also transmitted it.
I see. Okay.
And they were at those sites. And then it was recorded, and it went through a scan converter back here,
mm-hmm.
which I'm sure you're aware of.
Yes.
And it was recorded here. And it was, I think it was also recorded at Goddard.
Okay. All right. Well, it what struck me was when you went from Apollo 14, which effectively, I mean, it's just this TV camera just added immeasurably to the mission of exploration for those. I mean, it was the eyes on the ground, or rather on the moon. It proved that any future missions would obviously have a system like this.
Yeah, the problem you get into, though, is that when you get out the Luna to Martian distance,
mm-hmm.
you know, the signal margins become so critical, and the pictures from that rover up there are great.
Oh, they're astounding.
But it takes time to build that picture.
Yes, a lot of people don't. It's a mosaic.
The way I like to look at that is telemetry.
Mm-hmm.
And you're doing a raster, you're building a raster, and each one, you know, the telemetry is building the lines of each picture.
Mm-hmm.
Basically what's happening. So if you could somehow get enough signal so you could do motion, then it would be incredible.
Yes. Because that's true. That takes.
And a possible way to do that, in my non-heavy technical mind, would be to transmit from the Martian surface up to a satellite.
Yes.
around Mars,
mm-hmm.
around Mars, and if that satellite had enough power, you could get your signal. You see what I'm getting at?
Yes, I do. Yeah, you couldn't get it directly to.
Well, you know, maybe by the time they go,
mm-hmm.
what these guys are doing now and change, you know, you never know.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah, I like to give you my favorite statement, if you don't mind.
No, go ahead.
When I came into this program here at JSC, I was a capsule communicator.
Mm-hmm.
You know what that is?
Yes.
Okay, and we went to all the sites around the world, and I later headed up that group. And I had been in the business before. I came here from Cape Canaveral. I'm an ex-air traffic controller and so on in the service. So, anyways, we would get up on a ship, for example. We had a couple ships.
Mm-hmm.
And you would sit there on your ship and look at the other ship, and you wouldn't be able to talk to them.
How do you mean, though?
It just, the comm wouldn't work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was so, I don't know, antiquated in the systems and in the early design of communication systems. You sometimes couldn't even talk to the ship next to you, and you could look at it. And now I sit here in my house,
mm-hmm.
and I've got this dinky little ass dish sitting out here,
mm-hmm.
you know, 7 inches or whatever, 10 or whatever the hell it is, and I'm looking at 600 channels of video.
Mm-hmm.
Get me?
Yes, I do.
And so when you say what'll be available when they finally get going there and what, I don't know.
Right.
You know, I can only talk from now. Because we've made such incredible leaps. I mean, look at, you know, much as I hate cell phones. I mean, look what your cell phone does today versus what it did 5 years ago.
Yes.
Are you looking at video? Or you, I mean, you're sending pictures to your girlfriend. What the hell are you doing?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
And a BlackBerry, look at that damn thing.
Yes.
It's mind-boggling.
Yes.
So, you know, I don't know what'll happen by the time they get ready to go there, but I sure would hope and somehow that we'd be able to see that in a real-time world and not just wait for a picture to come down and look at one picture.
Well, one of the things that a big issue with Ron Creel has encountered since he was one of the engineers on for the thermal system, his crusade, if you will, is gleaning all the legacy engineering of Apollo. And using it to apply to the new vision for space exploration. Whatever it is they're working on right now, there are things to be learned, lessons learned from the past. And sometimes he gets a warm reception at these various centers to talk about thermal issues. Sometimes they'll say, pardon me, what's your name?
What's your name? Who are you?
Yeah, well, that's fine, but that was not invented here. That was 30 years ago, and we've got our own agenda.
Right. Let me give you a better example.
Okay.
What's your background?
Well, I'm a mechanical engineer. I've got an industrial design degree, but I've done EM packaging mostly.
When I left NASA, I went out and I worked a lot with the Department of Defense and contractors and so on. I ended up with a really good deal. Things worked out great for me for about 15 years before I retired. And I was basically a consultant. I consulted for Boeing out of Seattle on a thing called the Inertial Upper Stage, which is a two-stage rocket.
Mm-hmm.
Flowed by both in the shuttle and on Titan, put satellites up.
Okay.
We did Mariner, we did Galileo and Magellan and so on.
Mm-hmm.
When you do consulting work and you talk to people and you like, for example, I was dealing a lot with young Air Force officers.
Yes.
You get into a meeting and you try and explain something to them on the subject, and then they keep going and going and say, look, you know, we did all that. It doesn't work. Why don't you just not try to reinvent the wheel, so on. When you start out as a consultant, you argue with them.
Mm-hmm.
Then what happens after a while, you get to the point where you tell them one time, and then you don't tell them again. You want to go beat your head up, go do it. And I'm sure that your buddy Ron has run into that.
Yes, he has.
See, he sits there and tells them what he's learned, which has not changed.
That's right.
That moon has not changed up there.
That's right.
Okay, that surface is the same. You know, it hasn't changed.
Mm-hmm.
And what he's trying to tell him is what he went through to do all that. And then what's going to happen to him, and I'll tell you right now, I don't remember him or how much I knew him or what, but I'll guarantee you he'll get worn out.
Well, he has gotten worn out.
Right.
He's very frustrated.
Right.
He wants to get a receptive audience because they're starting to do all this engineering work now.
Right.
They're releasing the RPOs for requests for proposals for the crew launch vehicle now.
Right.
Eventually, they're going to get around to doing the rover. Although they're doing preliminary studies on that, they're actually debating whether they should have a different kind of wheel for the rover.
Right.
And his mantra is, excuse me, but lunar soil hasn't changed in the last 30, 40 years or 30, 40 million years.
If you go over there to the lab, there's some of it there.
Yeah, and it's like they're doing these new studies like they're going to discover something new.
Well, one of the things that's happened is part of this exploration program is they have let all these little contracts to people and companies and so on, little companies, because they've got all these great ideas.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of them are just really great and interesting to listen to, but a lot of them are nothing but, what are you doing? You know, why are you doing that? There's a company in Washington doing mission design. Hey, the orbital mechanics to get from here to the moon and back again have not changed.
Right.
And there are guys running around here at NASA that have done all that. Why are you going off trying to figure out how it works? We all know how it works.
Yes, exactly.
See, so I can understand his frustrations. I really can. I feel for him if he's involved in it. I really do.
Not directly. It's ancillary. It's volunteer capacity.
Oh,
but
that's even worse. Now you're not even getting paid. It gets even worse.
Right. It's like sometimes he gets an ear, and sometimes he gets an ear full of,
Oh, yeah.
You know.
Yeah, I can understand. Yeah. Oh,
so.
God. Yeah, it's tough. Some of the stuff is tough because as far as the moon goes, you know, as far as the moon goes, it hasn't changed. It's there.
Well,
hasn't changed.
The thing that concerns me is that if this attitude prevails, they're going to encounter scenarios that they hadn't anticipated, which apparently, I mean, all the, it's amazing. Apollo 13 was a brilliant example of not just a double, but a triple failure, practically. And they still got them home.
Yeah, we got them home, yep.
These people who think they know they have all the answers, when they're confronted with a catastrophic failure they hadn't counted on, because they hadn't thought it through.
That's right.
Well, we'll just have to see what they, hopefully.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff around, and there's a lot of good data around, and a lot of good people that are still alive. I go to more and more funerals every day.
Yes.
You know, when you get to be our age, you do that.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot of people that could help, and that are willing to work as far as for free, or for willing to work for money. Like I ran into a friend of mine who was one of the flight dynamics guys, and him and another guy are going to work over here for Booz Allen, who is getting a contract to do mission design work.
Mm-hmm.
Well, these are the same guys that did the mission design for going to the moon.
Yes.
You know, it's the same guy.
Mm-hmm.
They're out there. There's a bunch of them out there.
And if they're smart, they'll pick the brains of those who've been there and done that, so
yeah.
They get it right.
Yeah, you got it.
And what's amazing is that they accomplished all this 30-some-odd years ago with computing power that's a mere fraction of what they have available today.
Oh, that's a whole other story.
Oh, it is, isn't it?
You know, we were talking about that the other day. The 360 computers, which were built for JSC, the first 360s.
Those were IBMs, right?
Oh, IBMs that were down in the bottom of the building.
Mm-hmm.
Did your laptop have more capability than one of those guys?
Yes. Yep. Pretty amazing stuff.
It's pretty wild.
I mean, with all our capabilities, we will have no excuse but to get it right.
Yeah.
That's my show.
Hey, I was talking to you, I was looking through this thing that I reviewed for this fellow Bill Wood.
Okay.
One of the things that's interesting is that he gives acknowledgments at the end of this thing.
Mm-hmm.
And some of these people might be able to help you.
Okay.
Who is the guy you were mentioning from Goddard just now?
Oh, you mean the engineer who's been helping me? Ron Creel.
He
worked for NASA. He wasn't one of the contractors. He was actually in one of the directorates working on thermal.
Anyways, there's a bunch of people here. Let me give you his phone number.
Okay.
I can't think of the website, but it is out on a website.
Okay.
I could have gotten it that way, but I'm slow speed, so I told him to mail the damn thing to me.
Okay.
He's a pretty good guy, and he's one of these guys that won't let his life die. You know,
mm-hmm.
He's still living in the world of that.
Yeah.
But he's a good guy, and I'm sure he'll help you, or he could tell you where this stuff is, you could look at it. And in the back of this, like I said, there's a whole series of names back there at the back of this. It's not that long. It's about 45 pages. But it talks about Paul Cohen and Olin Graham and the guy's spacecraft films, Mark Gray.
Yes, that's right.
Okay, Dick Hole and Eric Jones, who I don't know what he's
called. Oh, yeah, Eric and I have been emailing.
Right,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Dick Nasker and Sam Russell and so on. But why don't you do this? Why don't you give Bill a call?
Bill Wood?
It's Bill Wood, and I'm going to give you his number here. Hold on. I've got it. I know I've got it here.
All right.
Because he drove me crazy. Oh, yeah. It's 760.
Okay.
256.
All right.
9576.
9576.
Right. And he is an ex track and station guy out of JPL, which was at where the hell is that thing located out in the desert?
Goldstone?
Goldstone, yeah.
Yeah.
he is. He worked out there, and he got into this thing, and he's been making a career of this whole thing. And there's other stuff out there also of different people. Some of it's not entirely correct and so on. But
okay.
You might want to give him a call and get his webpage. I was trying to see as I was breezing through this thing as we were talking if the webpage is listed here, and I don't see it. I was just going to give that to you so you wouldn't have to spend time calling him and talking.
Okay.
But there's some good data there you might want to look at. And
okay.
Nice colored pictures and so on.
All right. Maybe if I typed in his name in Google, I'm sure it'd come up with something.
It sure will. It should. It really should. Yeah, that's probably the best way to do it.
Okay.
He's
between
a former Apollo manned space flight station engineer.
Okay.
It starts out back in 19.
Do you have an email address?
Yeah, it's INCO, INCO.
All right.
Technology. It's all one word.
All right.
At mindspring.com.
All right. INCO Technology.
Right,
that
INCO is the position of the control center.
Okay. Right.
And that was the name of my company when I retired.
All right.
Yeah.
Mindspring.com. Got it. Okay, I'll send you off an email today so you've got mine.
Okay, good. Yes,
and
you're in Miami, are you?
Yes, I am. We South Miami, okay. Actually. We survived two hurricanes this year, back-to-back.
Yeah, my niece is down there in that area also, South
Miami. Gosh. And we thought Andrew was bad, but
well, we ran from Rita here.
Yes.
We thought, you know, I live about 1 mile from the Gulf of Mexico.
My goodness, okay.
And that thing, when we left here, it was force 5 and it was headed at us.
Yes.
We closed the garage door, we turned the car, my wife and I said, well, maybe I'll see you again and maybe I won't. And we got lucky.
Yes.
And we also got lucky myself, we got out of here in time, we missed all that.
Well, there's no disgrace in fleeing, something like that, okay?
Well, I always leave hurricanes. I've been through all that when I lived in Florida, and I've been through a couple typhoons in the Pacific. I was in the service.
Yes.
I don't need that.
Right. So,
yep.
Well, I appreciate you talking with me today.
Okay, anything. If you need more work, more data, call me, and I'll gladly give you what I can give you.
Okay, that's terrific. Thanks so much.
Good luck on your book.
Thank you, and I'll keep in touch with you.
Okay, good deal.
All right.
Bye.
Bye-bye.